Do you use the blue pill to charge your sex life? Have you been thinking about trying the blue pill? What if we can promise you the same results for less than $3 a pill? If you're paying $20 a pill for the other pills, you're getting taken to the cleaners. Our pill delivers the exact same results for less than $3. We'll do the math for you. You'll save more than $16 a pill for the same results. Want more? We'll give you 40 blue pills or 40 yellow pills for $99 and add 4 more pills free. You save more than $500. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know what to do next. You need to call and get your 44 pills for just $99. Stop overpaying for the other blue pills. Call us and start saving a ton of money for the exact same results. Ordering is fast and easy with your pills delivered to your door in a non-marked package. 800-223-0992. 800-223-0992. 800-223-0992. That's 800-223-0992.
Live, worldwide, Sports Byline USA. And here's host, Ron Barr.
And wherever you might be across this great country of ours and around the world, I'm Ron Barr. Good to have you with us for this edition of Sports Byline. Hope you had a good weekend. Enjoyed the NCAA tournament, first week of that. Some upsets. It really is a tournament that there is no clear-cut favorite. Now, you do have number one seeds that are moving on, but you also had the defending champion get knocked out, Villanova. But looking at the Sweet 16, first of all, the Thursday games, you got number one seed in the West, Gonzaga, still in it. They go up against number four, West Virginia. And you got number 11 seed, Xavier, going up against number two seed, Arizona. Those games in the West regional, that'll be on Thursday. And then taking a look at some of the other games, another one on Thursday will be number one Kansas in the Midwest. They'll play Purdue, a number four seed, and also number three seed Oregon taking on number seven seed Michigan. That'll be a Thursday game as well. And on Friday, two games for you. Number one seed UNC going up against number four seed Butler. And another one on Friday, number three seed UCLA against number two seed Kentucky. So Xavier, of course, number seven Michigan. Those are seeds that a lot of people didn't particularly think would be there. UCLA looked awfully good, and I think they're a team to probably make it into the Final Four. So that's the way it's all set up as we move into the next weekend of the NCAA March Madness. By the way, we're going to be talking baseball this hour. Jason Turbo is standing by to join us in the studio, writer who has written for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and Sports Illustrated. He's written several best-selling books on baseball, and his latest is Dynastic, Bombastic, and Fantastic, Reggie, Raleigh, Catfish, and Charlie Finley's Swingin' A's. And this book chronicles a band of brawling winners who won three straight World Series titles in the 70s. The only other team to win three straight World Series titles, the New York Yankees as well. And I came down to San Francisco in 1977. That was kind of in the heart right after they won those three World Championships. But the team was still together. They struggled afterwards. But boy, the personalities that they had on those teams, when you think about Catfish Hunter, you think about Vita Blue, Blue Moon Odom, Reggie Jackson, others like that. That was really an unusual team that won some pretty good baseball games. So we're ready to crank it up. Good to have you with us here on Sports Byline.
Hey, travelers, do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
855-325-1780. 855-325-1780. That's 855-325-1780.
Rebuild or replace transmission, $3,200. Anti-lock brake system, $1,000. Rebuild or replace engine, $2,400. Truth is, once your manufacturer's warranty runs out, it's all on you. Every last cent. Get protection for covered repairs with a vehicle service contract from Toco Warranty. Unlike other companies, with Toco, there's no down payment, and the monthly payments are really affordable. Not sure how long you're keeping your car? At Toco, you can pay as you go. Keep your hard-earned cash and call Toco Warranty right now at 800-222-2313 to save big money on covered auto repairs. Prices vary by vehicle, but for about the cost of a tank of gas per month, a Toco plan has your back on expensive covered car repairs. Monthly payments are very affordable. Get your free quote now. Call Toco at 800-222-2313. That's 800-222-2313. 800-222-2313. Cancellation fee may apply. Subject to eligibility. Not available in Missouri and Washington. Waiting period and deductible apply. Coverage provided and administered by Warrantech Corporation or its affiliates. Not affiliated with any manufacturer or dealership. Visit TocoWarranty.com for complete terms and conditions.
Pedro Fernandez here. You might know me as the host of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, but this time I'm here to talk about that four-letter word everybody dreads, pain. If you have back pain or knee pain like I do, hey, you should know about the Health Alert Hotline. I'm talking about if Medicare is your primary medical insurance, and guess what? You can qualify for a back or knee brace or a shoulder brace for little or no charge. Anything to help me with the pain, hey, makes it more manageable, gets my attention, folks. I love the free delivery, and they take care of the paperwork for you. So if you have Medicare and need help for your back, ankle, knee, or shoulder, guess what? Give the Health Alert Hotline a call, toll-free, 1-800-428-1570, 1-800-428-1570. You can qualify for a back or knee brace or a shoulder brace for little or no charge, 1-800-428-1570, the Health Alert Hotline, 1-800-428-1570.
This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Jason Turbo joins us on Sports Byline, writer who has written for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and Sports Illustrated, and he's written several best-selling books on baseball, and his latest is Dynastic, Bombastic, and Fantastic, Reggie Raleigh, Catfish, and Charlie Finley, Swingin' A's. The book chronicles a band of brawling winners who won three straight World Series titles in the 70s and knocked baseball into the modern age. You say, Jason, that the A's of the early 70s were the most transformative team in baseball history. How so?
Well, Charlie Finley, their owner, was, I can't undersell it, he was a visionary. He was a man of perpetual ideas, which made him stand out in a sport that it's always been stuck behind the times.
You know, when you think about Charlie Finley, I don't think a lot of people know about him. Of course, that was a different generation in baseball. But give me a description of him. Tell everybody what he was like.
Boy, he was a self-made multimillionaire, an insurance man, kind of. He almost invented group insurance policies for medical professionals and always wanted a baseball team. When he finally got one in 1961, the Kansas City Athletics, he ran it with an iron fist. The guy was an egomaniac. He was nearly completely incapable of delegating responsibility, which ended up with him having a finger in every pot in his organization. He quickly became the team's general manager. He dictated the playlist for the ballpark organist. He dictated the menu for the press dining room. He did it all. And he was willing to embrace suggestion, but that with the understanding that was all it was. All the ideas were his alone. All the decisions were his alone. And he wanted all the praise passed to the top of the food chain.
You know, I don't know if there's a connection here, and if you think that there is, let me know. He came out of Chicago. And another man that came out of Chicago that was very much like him, at least from a showmanship standpoint, was Bill Veeck.
Mm-hmm.
Did they have any connection at all?
Well, a little bit. Charlie Finley actually tried to buy into Veeck's syndicate for the Chicago White Sox before he owned the A's. Veeck couldn't stand the guy. Yeah, and he viewed Charlie Finley as a cut-rate version of himself. And he aced him out. And eventually, when Veeck sold the team, he sold it to people other than Finley, even though Finley was clamoring for it. Veeck didn't like him at all. But that in that, he was in good company. Very few of the owners around Major League Baseball like Charlie Finley.
Yeah, he was also an entertainer, meaning Charlie Finley. And that was something that wasn't a part of baseball back at that particular time. And I was always surprised about that, because if you think about a man who comes from a background of insurance, that's very, very conservative. And I would not call Charlie Finley conservative.
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, he went out of his way to bolster the fan experience. He repainted the stadium in Kansas City. He built a petting zoo in right field, for crying out
loud. Yeah, he had the donkey.
And he brought in the Missouri mule,
yeah,
which he said was the result of the greatest mule search in history. He was very fond of pumping up his own achievements. He brought in the bright colors in baseball. First, and they were muted greens and yellows in Kansas City, and when they got to Oakland, boy, they exploded into bright greens and yellows and wedding gown white. He was a showman, and he wanted baseball to sink its tentacles into the viewing public.
How much did he know about baseball itself?
Not very much. I mean, enough. He was a baseball fan, but he was smart enough to know his own limitations. He wasn't a talent evaluator. He got by as a general manager because he was a canny salesman. He got into conversations with fellow executives, with scouts, with other personnel across the sport constantly. He was on the phone all the time. He would collect opinions and take notes. And when he heard something repeated often enough, usually in the guise of trade talks, he would act on it. And he built an amazing dynasty through that. He never really rested either. In 1972, he made something like 67 deals, like actual trades. Dick Williams said his best method of figuring out who was on the team at any given time was to walk into the clubhouse and see who showed up. But if Finley had a method to his madness, it was that he left his core players alone. He never touched Reggie Jackson or Sal Bando or Catfish Hunter. It was all the ancillary players that he was fond of flipping around the league over and over.
I know it has always been said he never had a scouting staff, because he would get on the telephone and call everybody, pick their brain as to who was a good player and who wasn't, just as you just said, and then he'd make his own decisions at that time. I came here in 1977, so I was involved with him, and I'll tell another story a little bit later on, but he had the smallest front office staff I've ever seen. Tell everybody how many people he usually, Carl Finley, who was that his uncle?
It was his cousin.
Cousin was the only front office person I ever saw or ever met.
Oh, yeah. He was down to seven people at one point. As a world champion baseball organization, including the controller who handled the ticket receipts, including the front office staff. I mean, there were no scouting bureaus. There were no marketing departments. It was all run through him. And even the people he had were burdened with many hats. I mean, Jimmy Bank was one of his traveling secretaries, and one of the rare people who actually had very little bad to say about Charlie Finley, whom I talked to. But even Bank couldn't take it, because he was the traveling secretary, and then Finley also made him the full-time PR guy, and then Finley also made him the full-time statistician, which gave him 5 or 6 hours away from the ballpark every day.
How much did he buy the team for?
Oh, gosh.
And did he buy it from somebody else? It had been in Philadelphia, of course, and then Kansas City.
It had been in Philadelphia. The Connie Mack estate sold it to a guy named Arnold Johnson, who moved it to Kansas City. Johnson was business associates with the two owners of the New York Yankees at the time, Del Webb and Dan Topping. He actually owned Yankee Stadium and then leased it back to them for tax purposes. And they convinced baseball to allow him to move to Kansas City. They turned the A's into a de facto farm system. Arnold Johnson sent all Kansas City's best players right to them. The rest of baseball didn't like it, but they understood the value of a powerhouse team in New York City. And one of Finley's first moves upon buying the team himself, Arnold Johnson fell dead of a heart attack on his way to a spring training game in 1961, maybe 1960. Finley bought a bus, an old bus, pointed it toward New York, and set it afire in a public display of arson, as symbolically saying the shipment of our best players to New York is over.
What was the general opinion of him by other baseball people?
They didn't like him. Like I said, baseball, by and large, even to this day, kind of sees anachronism as a virtue. They're not quick moving. They're always several years behind the times. I mean, Jackie Robinson came into baseball long after the military had integrated. Baseball was always playing catch up. Finley wasn't willing to tolerate that. He wanted to be several steps ahead of the game, and he was not shy about ramrodding his ideas down the throats of his fellow owners, who rebelled at every given opportunity. He was the loudest voice in the room, but he didn't care about making friends.
What were some of the other promotions in Kansas City that he did? I've heard about him, but maybe you can give me a little more background.
Oh, he had things like Farmer's Day.
The cows. That's right.
Cows, cow milking contests. He had greased pig catching contests in which his players, literally his players, would try and catch greased pigs on the field. There was one incident in Chicago. He brought Charlie O the mule everywhere. He had this beautiful air-conditioned trailer custom made for his mule. he brought it to Chicago. They wouldn't let him bring the mule into the ballpark, so he found a way around it. Charlie O was a gigantic beast. Nothing he could do about sneaking that into the ballpark. He rented a smaller mule, put it into a crate labeled baseball equipment, got it onto the field, and got his best player, Ken Harrelson, to drag it out on the field. The mule is running wild. The White Sox management is going nuts that this is happening. Finley was roaring with laughter. Finally, Harrelson manages to pull the mule off the field through the dugout. The mule steps on his foot. He's out of action for several days. It doesn't matter. Finley made his point, and that was ultimately what he ever wanted. He wanted to make his point, and it didn't matter what the consequences were.
I would think, Jason, that in Kansas City, which is in the heartland of the country, that would be something that would be very, very appealing to fans.
It was. And the problem for Finley in Kansas City was that he was really, really duplicitous with the community. And he promised to move there. He promised to move his family there. He never did. He never stopped trying to get the team out of town. There were constant rumors about places like Louisville and Seattle and Milwaukee. And one of the final straws was the Kansas City Star wrote up a feature about this secret trip he took to Dallas to scout the Cotton Bowl as a place to move. And Finley's response was to stage something he called Ernie Mell Appreciation Night. And Ernie Mell was the longtime sports editor of the Kansas City Star. And during that event, he presented Mel with something he called the Poison Pen Award. It's over the top, like big banners made up with a cartoon figure looking evil, dipping a quill pen into something labeled poison ink. Mel was smart enough not to show up, but that so revolted the people of Kansas City that they completely turned on him. Shortly thereafter, the people of Kansas, the commissioners of Kansas City, wooed the Chiefs from Texas, the NFL's Chiefs, by giving them $1 a year lease. Finley said, well, if they got it, I want it. And they laughed him out of the room. They said, no way. Finley responded by not paying his rent. Kansas City responded by locking him out of his own ballpark offices. For a time, the Major League Baseball, Kansas City Athletics, was run out of the garage of one of Finley's scouts.
Amazing. Interesting book. I hope you'll check it out. Dynastic, bombastic, and fantastic. We're with the author, Jason Turbo, on Sports Byline.
Listen closely. You don't have to live with knee pain. You heard right. If you're 65 or older and suffering from knee pain, you may qualify for an advanced pain-relieving brace at little to no cost to you. Doctor Approved Medical, America's trusted resource for knee braces, will work with Medicare or insurance benefits to see if you qualify for these knee braces. Many people are now using our knee brace as an alternative to surgery or harmful medications and experience pain relief they haven't felt in years. The only way to see if you qualify is to call us. 800-816-0365. One of our friendly experts will handle all paperwork and have it delivered for free. Don't let your knee pain turn into something worse. Find out now about these advanced knee braces now covered by Medicare or insurance benefits. Call now and get free shipping, plus a complimentary, easy-to-use pedometer. 800-816-0365. 800-816-0365. 800-816-0365. Little to no cost with full insurance payment, copay, and deductible supply promo subject to qualification while supplies last.
Dish TV is better than cable TV. Why? Because you can save 45% on packages compared to your high-priced cable bill. Wow. Take those giant scissors out and cut the cable and save with Dish TV. Plus, you get a free DVR upgrade to record your favorite shows and free installation. And with Dish Anywhere, you can watch TV for free on your mobile device. Act fast. You can save hundreds of dollars. Does your cable company do that for you? I don't think so. Get all the best TV programming at your fingertips at a fraction of the price of cable TV. So say adios, arrivederci, goodbye to the high cable bill, and save up to 45% on Dish TV packages today. These are limited time offers and can change at any time. Call fast. 800-405-2561. 800-405-2561. 800-405-2561. That's 800-405-2561. Nobody really needs or wants home security until it's too late. You've heard the statistics about how many burglaries there are per day. You see the news. You know there are people out there that do bad things. The best way to help protect your home and your property is with an ADT monitored system from Protect Your Home, an ADT authorized premier provider. Call right now to get a free wireless home security system valued at $850. An ADT monitored system can help protect your home from fires, theft, floods, and call for emergency help. Call now to find out more about our $850 free wireless home security system and start enjoying the peace of mind of security today. Call 800-587-4281, 800-587-4281, 800-587-4281. This offer is for new customers only. Termination fees apply. $99 customer installation charge and 36-month monitoring agreement required. All for details. License terms and conditions available at secureathome.com.
This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Jason Turbo is with us in the studio. Again, this is a fantastic book. If you want to know something about a very unusual franchise, a very unusual owner, and unusual players as well, I urge you to check it out. Dynastic, bombastic, and fantastic. Jason Turbo, the author of this book. Tell me a little bit about the decision to come to Oakland, of all places, with that franchise.
Well, Finley wanted to move desperately almost as soon as he got to Kansas City. Oakland was appealing for a couple of reasons, primarily because it had a brand new 50,000-seat Coliseum that no one had ever played in. Finley liked that. Partly, I think, he liked the idea that everyone around baseball told him that the Bay Area was not a two-team market, that he could never succeed here. And he was very fond of bucking popular opinion. In fact, he hired a search firm to research various municipalities and ordered them to tell me to move to Oakland. They had no choice. He was dead set on moving here. And it turns out that everyone was right. Finley was never able to draw here. And for a long while, the Giants across the bay were also lagging remarkably in attendance. The Bay Area was hard pressed to support two teams for a good long while. And Finley didn't do much to endear himself to the Bay Area community either. That didn't help things.
Yeah, I also know that he didn't move here. I mean, he would come and live here for a little while during the course of the season, maybe for a couple of weeks. And that was another thing that stuck in the craw of a lot of fans on the East Bay. And as you said, he never warmed himself. He never understood the nature of Oakland, the blue-collar nature of Oakland. I mean, he was a Midwesterner. Rich man, so there was really not a true fit here. What type of team, as far as players, did he bring to the West?
Incredibly talented, obviously. They won three straight World Series. I think that the secret to this team, after talking to virtually all of them, was that they had an array of leadership qualities. It wasn't one or two guys who felt they were the leaders of the team. It was nine or ten. And they rode each other mercilessly, verbally. They needled each other for lazy plays on the field, bad behavior off the field, ugly outfits worn on the team bus. It didn't matter. If you exhibited bad behavior, you were going to hear about it from every corner of the clubhouse until that behavior was fixed. And that, I think, was a large part of what kept these guys so focused come playoff time for so long. It was also a large reason why they had so many fistfights. they pushed the boundaries of what was acceptable and didn't bother to pause at any point. They rolled right over those boundaries, and egos would get scuffed and fists would fly.
There was a real dichotomy there with Charlie Finley as the owner of the team. I mean, they battled with him over money and everything, but he also was pretty good to some of those players as far. He had a situation where he guaranteed if they invested with him that they wouldn't lose any money.
Absolutely. He did great things for the players early on. That was the most unbelievable thing I've heard, because these guys were making $20,000, $30,000 a year. He's offering to invest any portion of their salary, and they frequently as much as double it with no threat of losing the money. You know, after their first World Series in 72, he gave them full-size replica trophies. He gave them the gaudiest rings any champion in baseball had ever seen, these beautiful pieces of hardware. He did many nice things for the players, but their relationship soured very quickly thereafter, hinging on an event that happened in the 1973 World Series when he essentially fired the team's second baseman, Mike Andrews.
Right.
The players rebelled after that. They slagged him up and down, and he never forgave them. From that point on, every nice thing he'd ever done was out the window.
A lot of people may not know about that event. Will you outline it for them? Tell them what happened with that event with Mike Andrews.
Sure. Andrews was a second baseman. They had acquired him midseason. He had been released by the White Sox. He had formerly been a very good second baseman. He had played for Dick Williams in Boston, all-star caliber guy. But by the time he reached Oakland, his throwing shoulder was kind of wrecked. He was no longer a very competent fielder. The A's signed him specifically to be a right-handed pinch hitter. Somehow, despite all of this, he found himself in the field, playing in the field in extra innings in Game 2 of the 1973 World Series. He made two very costly errors. The A's lost the game. Charlie Finley's response to this was to try and get him off the roster. He wanted to replace him with minor league second baseman Manny Trio. The only way to do this, of course, because rosters are locked for the postseason.
To claim an injury.
Claim an injury. So he ginned up this injury report. He had the team doctor give Andrews a very cursory examination, drafted a memo saying, I believe, in my opinion, he is too injured to continue playing. Not that he got injured in this game, but he is too injured to continue playing. He strong-armed Andrews into signing it. The rest of the team, while this was going on, ended up on the bus, ready to go to the airport. They couldn't figure out why the bus wasn't leaving. They knew that Andrews wasn't there, and a few of them had seen the examination going on. They worked themselves up into a lather. They started chanting, "We want Mike! We want Mike!" Mike never came. So when they flew to New York, it was just nonstop meetings between, you know, alternating groups of players. They were talked all the way to New York. They got angrier and angrier. They landed in New York. They went to bed angry. And when they woke up, the New York media capital of the country, the game's biggest stage, descended. They could not get enough quotes, and the players were ready to unload, and they did. They slagged Finley up and down. They talked about what a rotten guy he was. They knew that if he could fire Mike Andrews for making physical errors during a game, he could do the same thing to any of them. And they responded viscerally. In fact, in the workout day, the following day, they all taped Andrews number 17 on their sleeves in athletic tape. And Finley was aghast. Commissioner Bowie Kuhn was similarly aghast. He ordered Finley to reinstate Andrews. Finley reluctantly did, with the caveat that he instructed his manager, Dick Williams, to let Andrews nowhere near the field at any cost. Dick Williams had himself had his fill of this entire drama, sent Andrews up to pinch hit at his earliest available opportunity. And the fans in New York, in Shea Stadium, God bless them, gave Andrews a standing ovation. It was fantastic. And the upshot, the coda to this story is that was the last straw for Dick Williams. After the A's won the World Series, in the clubhouse in Game 7 with champagne literally flying around him, he quit.
Yeah. Three straight championship years, 72, 73, and 74. And I always felt in retrospect that this seems kind of a strange Machiavellian twist to it all, but Charlie being Charlie, that this really united that team and really built that internal fire from a competition standpoint that really worked to their advantage in winning those three World Series championships. Am I right about that?
Well, I think so. And it also had the added bonus of giving them collectively something to hate. It wasn't themselves. As much as they hated each other and were willing to fight each other, they knew they had that much in common, you know, the disregard for the guy at the top.
What was the essence of the turmoil in the clubhouse?
The essence?
Meaning, what was it for the fights? What caused those fights? I know that there were their personality. You had North in there. You had Ray Fosse in there. You had Reggie involved in there. But that type of mix, what was it that caused them to take on each other?
There's a lot of guys who thought they were leaders. And when someone does something that rubs you the wrong way, you push back. And there weren't a lot of guys willing to take that pushback. They'd stand up. And you've got Blue Moon Odom, who loved the verbal repartee as much as anybody. His thin skin may have been a bit thinner than others. And when he got it back, he'd respond in kind with his fists. He got into fights with almost everybody, very famously with Raleigh Fingers.
Right.
Before the World Series in 1974. That was about Fingers' marital situation. Raleigh had been going through some very tough times with his wife. Odom didn't know when to quit, pushed him too far, and suddenly they were brawling. And this was before the World Series ever started, when they should be giddy and getting ready. It was all kinds of things. It was Reggie crossing Mike Epstein's guests off the pass list in Texas. People with the fabulous name of Sherman Berman and family. Reggie with the immortal phrase, "There ain't no Jews in Texas," crossed them off the list, and Epstein started pounding on him. These fights were started for any number of reasons.
Yeah. The catfish hunter, knowing catfish as I did, a low-key type of guy. I always wondered whether he'd ever make it in New York, and I thought New York would probably eat him alive, but he certainly did work out well there. Where was he in this whole mix of thing? Was he a peacemaker in this, or was there any peacemakers at all?
Yeah, I mean, Bando, they were all needlers. I mean, none of them were.
Gene Tennis?
Even Gene Tennis. Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, Gene Tennis has as sharp a wit as anyone on the team. They all love to push buttons. I don't want to say there were no innocents, because that implicates guilt somehow, and I don't think this was a situation of guilt. But they were all very active in this capacity, especially Catfish. I mean, as much as anyone, Catfish had the respect, though. Everyone knew that it wasn't malicious. Everyone knew it was coming from a place of entirely a place of good. So he didn't get into many dust-ups physically, but he was right there verbally with everybody.
In about 15 seconds, the commonality was, once they crossed the white lines, there was no fighting. They were one team, and I thought that was something that surprised me.
Well, that's it. I mean, they kept each other accountable, and at the cost of fighting with each other. And it's two sides of the same coin. I really think that's a big reason for their sustained excellence.
This is a book I suggest you pick up and read, and we're going to make it a selection of the month on the Sports Byline USA Book Corner. It's a baseball book, but it's a good one, because Jason Turbo has written it. He has written for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and Sports Illustrated. Dynastic, Bombastic, and Fantastic is the name of the book. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the Oakland A's managers during their run to success. We've got you on Sports Byline.
Hey there. Did you know that with a bachelor's degree, on average, you could make almost twice as much over a lifetime than a person with just a high school diploma? It's true. According to the 2012 U.S. Census Bureau, college grads with a bachelor's degree make almost twice as much as high school grads. Now, going back to school is easier than ever at Independence University. Log on and complete coursework from the park or the beach or even your couch watching the kids. And Independence University gives you the tools, a free tablet and laptop, for undergrad students to use and keep when they graduate. That's right. Get a laptop so you can go to college from anywhere. Take the first step to a new career in business, information technology, healthcare, or graphic arts. Call to find the online degree program that's right for you, and you could be on your way to increasing your earning potential.
800-797-1256. 800-797-1256. That's 800-797-1256.
Tired of calls, levies, and liens from the IRS, or hiring others who don't get the job done? Call Wall & Associates and you'll never talk to the IRS again. The IRS has a program to eliminate tax debt, and Wall & Associates professionals are trained to maximize its benefits for you. You always speak with a live person with real support and real knowledge. We've helped thousands of taxpayers like you settle their tax debt with the IRS for a fraction of what they owe. We solve tax problems. Call Wall & Associates now, 800-480-5708. We have the professionals who know how to solve tax problems. If you owe money to the IRS, your tax problems are not going away by themselves, and the passage of time will only make matters worse. Act now, before it's too late. Call Wall & Associates right now to speak to a professional tax relief agent. Call 800-480-5708. That's 800-480-5708. Again, 800-480-5708.
My joints used to kill me. I'd wake up with stiff knees and a stiff back, and it wouldn't get much better throughout the day. I went to doctors and took almost every supplement you can think of, and nothing seemed to help. Then I found something called Oil Can Joint Lubricant. They use only top-of-the-line, all-natural ingredients, and I know many companies make similar claims, but here's the big difference. Oil Can ingredients are scientifically formulated to work together faster than anything else in the marketplace. That's guaranteed. I take Oil Can every day. My knee pain was gone in just a few days. So if you have knee pain, back pain, and you've tried everything, try Oil Can Joint Lubricant risk-free right now. I'm confident you'll have fewer aches and pains within days, or we will gladly refund your money. Call right now. 800-989-1795. 800-989-1795. 800-989-1795. 800-989-1795.
This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Jason Turbo is with us, and we're talking about his book. It's a good one, Dynastic, Bombastic, and Fantastic, Reggie Raleigh Catfish and Charlie Finley's Swingin' A's. Let me ask you about his managers, because I happened to be in the dugout the day he had a press conference there after he had hired Bobby Winkles out of Arizona State as his manager. And I'll never forget it, because as the media, he was down at the other end of the dugout, as the media was talking to Bobby Winkles, he was down at the other end talking to Dick Williams on the phone about, well, if I have to change the manager, are you going to be up there? I've never forgotten that. And then the other one, when he threatened to leave the Oakland Coliseum, he had a press conference at one of the hotels by the airport. Mm-hmm. And what I didn't understand, it was outside, and the podium was right here facing one direction, and the chairs were facing the other direction. And then he opened up the press conference by saying, I wanted to have it indoors, but we're not making enough money that I could rent a room.
Charlie Finley left out in the cold by his own devices.
Tell me about his managers.
Well, Finley ran through managers like tissues out of a box. He 20 years he owned the team. He went through 18 managers, twice each counting Hank Bauer and Alvin Dark, who he hired, fired, and then rehired. If you wanted to last with Charlie Finley, you had to be able to take interference to an alarming degree. He would call Dick Williams especially. Dick Williams was the manager for the first two championships, the longest tenured of any of Finley's managers. He lasted 3 years. he quit on his own accord. Yeah, he was the rare guy who wasn't fired. But he would call Williams at home on his off days. He would call at night when Williams got off the field. His office phone would be ringing. He put Williams in a suite on the road so that either Williams or the traveling secretary would be there to answer the phone. In fact, Williams once responded to the dugout phone ringing by asking a coach to pick it up and tell him, I'm not here. So he was able to deal with it. Williams, one reason his players loved him so much was that he insulated them in a way that no other manager did. He absorbed the brunt of Hurricane Charlie, so they didn't have to feel it to the degree that they would have otherwise. And they realized that when Williams left and Alvin Dark stepped in.
Yeah, when you take a look at his front office, we've already talked about it, 6-7 people, including Finley, Carl Finley. But he also had a young teenage vice president.
Yeah, the younger brother of a clubhouse kid named Stanley Burrell, who Charlie took a hankering to. Charlie never came to Oakland that often. He was in Chicago.
He listened to the games on the telephone.
On the telephone, he would have this kid, Stanley Burrell, do play-by-play from the press box. He even tried to strong-arm him into the radio booth on occasion. That didn't go over so well. He made them the honorary VP. One of the players realized that Burrell bore a striking facial resemblance to Hank Aaron, and so the players all started calling him Hammer. And Stanley Burrell eventually grew up and became a famous musician and adopted the name MC Hammer.
And, boy, he had a good career for a while in music. But there was also another side to it. The players thought he was a spy.
Yeah, well, that dogged Finley's clubhouses all the way back to the beginning. I mean, Kansas City, they took to meeting in storage rooms in the deepest bowels of the stadium to try and get, in case the place was bugged, and still Finley found out. And it turns out that he didn't really have a spy. He had a lot of spies. You know, this the same methodology in which he would mine information from fellow executives, he'd mine it from his own players. He'd find information about 10 different things, just low-level stuff. They thought they were in a friendly conversation, but he'd use each of those nuggets to guide future conversations, and he would just build up the dossier. He knew what happened almost as soon as it happened. It was crazy.
You know as well as I do, most major league, certainly baseball teams, always had a major radio affiliate. But here in Oakland one year, they had a college station broadcasting. And really, John Miller, his career was really launched by the fact that he got an opportunity to broadcast the Oakland A's because of that. Tell everybody about that situation.
Well, John Miller was hired. This is his first play-by-play gig at any level. His introductory press conference was also the press conference to introduce Alvin Dark as manager. Finley hadn't announced anyone. No one knew who was coming up. They knew that spring training was literally days away. Bags were already unpacked in Mesa, Arizona. Coaches Irv Noren and Vern Hoshite had been meeting to discuss how to run practices because the team had no manager. This is the world champion A's. It was crazy. So Finley was also a sucker for drama. And at the introductory press conference, he stepped to the mic and said, I'm pleased and proud to introduce someone who I've been waiting eagerly, John Miller. And John Miller's like, oh, my God. Everyone thought he was going to introduce a manager. Miller was canny enough to keep his remarks short, and Alvin Dark quickly followed him.
I think he was, 21 years old? 20?
Something like that. I think 22, 23.
Yeah.
He put up with it for a year. He got fired. Everybody got fired. I mean, every broadcaster Finley employed other than Monty Moore got fired after a maximum of 2 seasons. So Miller never took it too hard.
And certainly Charlie had his opinions about the facial hair and the look of his ball players, their long hair and their beards and everything.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, that's Reggie Jackson. Reggie showed up into camp one year with a mustache, and he refused to shave it, which at the time was unheard of. I mean, some players came into camp with facial hair. They would shave them as a rite of spring training. Reggie wouldn't do it. Many of his teammates were aghast. They couldn't convince him to shave. And they figured the best way to do it was to grow mustaches of their own. Finley would notice it collectively, order a blanket rebuke, make them all shave. Instead, Finley, because he was always thinking, sensed a promotional opportunity. He decreed that anybody with a mustache by June 18th, the day of the team picture, would get a $300 bonus, which Ken Holtzman replied, for $300, I will grow hair on my feet. And they became not only the shaggiest bunch in baseball, but the only shaggy bunch in baseball. That year's World Series against the extremely clean-cut Cincinnati Reds was known as the Hares versus the Squares.
That's a good story. Also, there were two players who were Jewish on the team for the Oakland A's, Ken Holtzman being one, a man that never threw a breaking pitch, or maybe two of them during the course of his career, all fastballs. And, of course, Mike Epstein, who I became good friends with as well. And, of course, with the tragedy over in Germany during the Olympics as well, they showed their feelings. I was surprised that Charlie would allow that to happen, knowing that he had his hands on just about everything.
Yeah, they were actually in Chicago, and talk about proximity to Charlie, when Black September went down, when the Israeli athletes were kidnapped and subsequently murdered. It was remarkable for me because Epstein and Holtzman both told me this story independently, and the details just meshed beautifully. They were both in their hotel rooms when they heard the news. They didn't know what to do. They knew they didn't want to be alone, but they didn't know who they wanted to be with. They both went down to the hotel lobby and found each other and spent the next hours walking the streets of Chicago together, just trying to make sense of it. They didn't know if it was an isolated incident. They didn't know if professional athletes were being targeted. Epstein himself had been an Olympian. They took it very personally. And they asked the equipment manager to fasten a black armband on both their uniforms. The next day, there they were. The uniforms were there with the black armbands, except there was a third uniform with a black armband as well, and that belonged to Reggie Jackson. And I think players' responses to Reggie really kind of were crystallized in these two conversations I had with Holtzman and Epstein. Epstein looked at it and said, man, Reggie Jackson, he saw what we're doing. He wanted to home in on the spotlight. He had no relationship with us. He didn't know what we were going through. You know, that's just his typical hot dog self. And independently, Epstein says, Holtzman says, you know, I knew Reggie a little bit. Reggie's father sat next to my father as they were watching games. They got to know each other. Reggie grew up in a Jewish neighborhood in Philadelphia. he understood Jewish people. He's a lot deeper than folks give him credit for. And he did this out of love. Two totally different opinions. Ultimately, it didn't matter. They all three wore these armbands that week, that month, all the way through the end of the season and into the playoffs. They only came off for the World Series.
Yeah, he told me the same thing about growing up in a Jewish neighborhood and the effect that it had on him. Let me talk to you about Charlie Finley from a different perspective, about the innovations that he wanted to bring to baseball. They were fought very hard, not only by the commissioner, but also by others in baseball. Tell people about some of the things he wanted to do.
Well, Finley loved the colors, obviously, with his uniforms. He never stopped trying to get baseball to adopt an orange ball. He actually got them to use it in several spring training games. It never worked out. The hide cracked and guys couldn't see the seams. But he never stopped pushing. He tried to get the three-ball walk. He got that enacted in a couple spring training games. You know, 19 walks and a zillion runs later, the extra offense he was looking for didn't quite materialize as hoped. He had some good ideas. I mean, he was the loudest voice promoting the designated hitter, which, you know, like it or hate it, it's been very successful for the American League. He also wanted a designated runner to complement that position, someone who could come in and run the bases without the player he's replacing coming out of the game.
How about nighttime baseball?
Nighttime baseball during the World Series, for sure.
Right.
He convinced baseball to start weekday World Series games at night, so the working man might tune in. He convinced baseball to start World Series game ones on Saturdays instead of Wednesdays to maximize weekend viewing. And he never stopped. I mean, he really was all about the viewing pleasure and growing baseball's base, its fan base. He was awfully pernicious about his methodology, so it didn't really work out. But had baseball paid more attention to Finley, I think it would have grown quicker than it did.
Where things came to a head were not is when Commissioner Bowie Kuhn, and he got into it over the trade.
The trade of the player sales,
yes.
Sales of Joe Rudy?
Yeah.
Yeah, back at the end of the run, 1976, Oakland had a group they called the Oakland Seven, who were prepared to play out their contracts and test free agency. Finley responded midway through the season by selling Joe Rudy and Raleigh Fingers to the Red Sox for $1 million each. And he sold Vita Blue to the Yankees for $1.5 million. Very, very much a presage of arms wars to come between those two franchises. Bowie Kuhn stepped in and negated the sales. He claimed that they came mid-season. They came at a huge cost. They directly impacted pennant races. This is what set them apart from previous player sales. Finley pleaded his case to Kuhn before Kuhn's ruling. He said, look, I built this franchise out of nothing, and I can build it out of nothing again, but I need the funds to do so. We're playing under different rules now. I need cash in order to collect a new batch of players. Kuhn didn't believe him, and rightfully so. Finley's actual plan was to sell the players, pocket the money, and then sell the team for essentially the same price as he would have received with the players.
What do you think his legacy is?
Man, he's undervalued. I mean, I think people remember the bad aspects of Finley, and there's plenty of bad aspects, but he was transformative. I mean, those A's took baseball as we picture it in the late 1950s and almost single-handedly dragged it into baseball as we picture it in the late 1970s. And that was almost all Finley. He was visionary, and he was extremely competent. And, I mean, in my opinion, he should be in the Hall of Fame without question.
Yeah, I think the combination of him, like you say, visionary, and also the Messerschmitt decision in the 70s as well as far as free agency, those were the two things that I saw probably that transformed baseball.
Oh, yeah. And Finley saw free agency coming. I mean, the year before free agency arrived, arbitration arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And Finley was one of the only owners screaming, don't let this happen under any circumstances. He thrived as a dictator in his universe. If he was calling all the shots, his team was fine. The moment he had to cede some of that control, in the case of arbitration, to, you know, an arbitrator deciding how much his players were going to be paid, he started to lose it. And it wasn't just his own payroll. It was that his players, for the first time, got to see out in the open what other players on other teams were making, and they realized exactly how underpaid they'd been for so long.
We only have a minute left. What do you want people to take away from this book?
The legacy of this team is so undervalued. This is the only team other than the New York Yankees to win three straight World Series. they are the most transformative franchise of their era, if ever. I mean, they're right up there. And the day-to-day drama would be amazing, even if it was a last-place team. Even if all the big-picture stuff didn't matter, this would still be a great day-to-day story. I just want to correct the record a little bit and help this team receive its just reward. And I think that's the reason a lot of the players talk to me so openly, is that they know they're members of the Oakland A's, and they're not remembered like they should be.
In about 15 seconds, you happy the way this book came out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people were really open with me, and I think I got into some really great stories.
Yeah, there are some great stories in here. I happen to live a portion of that, of course, being here in the Bay Area. Jason, I want to compliment you in the book, and also I want to thank you for coming in and telling the story, because it's one that needed to be told. I appreciate you being in here. You're welcome anytime.
I appreciate that. Thanks for having me on.
Jason Turbo, again, check out this book, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and Sports Illustrated writer from time to time. But this is a great book. It's called Dynastic, Bombastic, and Fantastic. We continue across the country and around the world on Sports Byline.
Do you have an old car sitting in your driveway? How would you like to learn a hassle-free way to get rid of it, help kids in need, and get a great tax donation in the process? It's real easy. One simple free call to our car donation hotline is all it takes. Call the Neshama Foundation at 800-760-4895, 800-760-4895. We'll come pick your car up for free and give you a tax donation for the full value of the car, running or not. The value of your unwanted car will go to help kids in need. It's fast and easy. Just call us and your car will be gone and on its way to helping children in 48 hours. And you get a nice tax deduction. Call the Neshama Foundation now to get rid of your car, help kids, and get a tax write-off.
Call 800-760-4895, 800-760-4895, 800-760-4895. That's 800-760-4895.
If you or someone you love suffers from drug addiction, now is the time to utilize your private health insurance PPO plan. If eligible, receive up to $30,000 or more in substance abuse benefits with low or no out-of-pocket cost. We are the National Treatment Network, the premier drug and alcohol treatment referral service operating 24/7. We help connect you with facilities nationwide that accepts PPO private health insurance for substance abuse. If you have PPO substance abuse coverage and you need immediate admittance to a medical detox or residential rehab treatment center, call us now. Call our live referral helpline today. The call is free. This program is not available to Medicare or Medicaid customers.
Call 800-296-0906. 800-296-0906. 800-296-0906. That's 800-296-0906.
Hey, travelers, do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
855-325-1780. 855-325-1780. That's 855-325-1780.
This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
And that's going to wrap up this hour of Sports Byline. The author, Jason Turbo, with us. He has written for the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and Sports Illustrated. And he is a guy that lives in the San Francisco Bay Area. And he had a chance to witness the teams in the 70s of the Oakland A's that won three straight World Series championships. And he really was fascinated and captivated by the team that would fight off the field. But when they got on it, they played awfully well. So he wrote a book about Charlie Finley and those dynamic players. It's called Dynastic, Bombastic, and Fantastic.
Be sure to check out the award-winning Sports Byline USA website. You'll find it at sportsbyline.com, and you can always listen to us online. Just go to the homepage and hit that Listen Live button. I'm Ron Barr. Good to have you with us on America's Sports Talk Show.
This is Joe Spano.
And this is Bob Black. The Spano and Black Attack, now on from 5 a.m. Pacific time till 7 a.m. Pacific time, Monday through Friday.
The Spano and Black Attack, the best sports talk on the best sports talk network, the Sports Byline Broadcast Network.